Welcome to Mind Walk, produced at Upstart Radio for Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Radio Free Moscow, IndieMedia.org, RadioForAll.net, community and micropower stations worldwide.
It is a vitally important time in American history, and we should all take it very seriously. Be very careful with what we say.
Well, and you should be very careful with what you say also.
How
can you possibly take exception with the motivation and the position of someone like Cindy Sheehan?
Because I believe she's run by far left elements in this country. I feel bad for the woman.
Have you lost family members in armed conflict?
No, I have not.
Well, then you can hardly speak for her, can you?
All right, I'm not speaking for her. Let me ask you this question.
Let's go back to your little red and green stories.
This is important. This is important. Cindy Sheehan lost a son, a professional soldier in Iraq, correct? She has a right to grieve any way she wants. She has a right to say whatever she wants. When she says to the public that the insurgents and terrorists are freedom fighters, how do you think, David Letterman, that makes people who've lost loved ones by these people blowing the hell out of them, how do you think they feel? What about their feelings, sir?
Well, what about, why are we there in the first place?
We're there.
The president himself, less than a month ago, said we are there because of a mistake made in intelligence. Well, whose intelligence? Was it just somebody got off a bus and handed it to him?
No, it was
the intelligence gathered by his administration.
By the CIA.
Yeah. So why are we there in the first place? Well, I agree with you that we have to support the troops. They are there. They are the best and the brightest of this country. There's no doubt about that. And I also agree that now we're in it, it's going to take a long, long time. People who expect it to be solved and wrapped up in a couple of years, unrealistic. It's not going to happen. However, that does not eliminate the legitimate speculation and concern and questioning of why the hell are we there to begin with? I'm very concerned about people like yourself who don't have nothing but endless sympathy for a woman like Cindy Sheehan. Honest to Christ.
No, I'm sorry.
Honest to Christ.
No, I'm just...
I'm not smart enough to debate you point to point on this, but I have the feeling... I have the feeling...
We can about check 60, that with the cat.
I have the feeling ahead. About 60% of what you say is crap.
Those people were operating, at least I believe they were operating, under express authorization. In a national...
Express authorization to break in?
Yes, sir. Under national security situation, under a situation of considerable moment to the nation, in the theft of top secret documents and their apparent delivery to the Soviet embassy. It never was my view that Hunt and Liddy as individuals had done something that was completely irrational in that break-in. In other words, they were operating in a national security setting and pursuant to either instructions or authorization.
Have you always maintained that position?
I have had a.
Do you recall?
I had an awareness of the president's constitutional powers and capacity.
Well, do you recall when we had our first interview in my office and we discussed this issue? You expressed shock and that such a thing had occurred, and indicated that you had informed Mr. Young or Mr. Krogh. See that this thing shouldn't happen again, but you didn't take any action such as ordering the firing of these people because of the general sensitive issues that were involved. Do you recall that?
Well, that isn't on the ground of illegality, Mr. Dash, and I don't think you asked me at that time whether
what my legal opinion was, for whatever it's worth. What you were asking me is what I did, and that's what I did.
Ehrlichman's opinion today about the legality of the break-in at the psychiatrist's office also is in sharp contrast with what he told the FBI last April. The FBI report, which came out at the Ellsberg trial, said that Ehrlichman did not agree with this method of investigation, burglary, and when he learned about the burglary, he instructed them not to do this again. This is made even more contradictory by the fact that Ehrlichman later told an interviewer that he had been misunderstood by the FBI. In any case, Ehrlichman now defends the Ellsberg burglary on the grounds of national security, and he said the president agrees with him.
I think if it is clearly understood that the president has the constitutional power to prevent betrayal of national security secrets, as I understand he does, and that is well understood by the American people, and an episode like that is seen in that context, there shouldn't be any problem. Point of fact, on the first occasion when I did discuss this with the president, which was in March of this year, he expressed essentially the view that I have just stated, that this was an important, a vital national security inquiry, and that he considered it to be well within the constitutional both obligation and function of the presidency.
And in that statement, Ehrlichman appears to be contradicting the president himself. In a statement issued 2 months ago on the Ellsberg investigation by the secret White House group called the Plumbers, Mr. Nixon said, "I did not authorize and have no knowledge of any illegal means to be used to achieve this goal." The president went on to say, "I would have disapproved if they had been brought to my attention." So while the last word we had from the president is that he would not have approved an illegal burglary, Ehrlichman says it wasn't illegal because of national security, and he'll be back before the committee tomorrow.
CIA agents are wanted men in Italy. They're accused of kidnapping an Egyptian cleric in Milan and smuggling him out of the country. The CIA calls the process rendition, the apprehension of suspects overseas without court orders or warrants. Witnesses to renditions tell the same story. Masked men in an unmarked jet seize their target, cut off his clothes, put him in a blindfold and jumpsuit, tranquilize him, and fly him away. A few may have been rendered by mistake. One of the covert missions happened in Stockholm, and the details have touched off a national scandal in Sweden. In 2001, two Egyptians living in Sweden, Mohammed Alziri and Ahmed Agiza, were arrested by Swedish police and brought to this airport. Thomas Hammerberg is a former Swedish diplomat who pressed for and got an investigation into how the Egyptians disappeared.
We know that they were badly treated on the spot. The scissors and knives were used to take off their clothes, and they were shackled. And some tranquilizers were put in the back of them, obviously in order to make them dizzy and fall asleep.
A suppository, it was some sort of tranquilizer.
Yes, yes.
She didn't want to be identified, but she had no doubt about where the plane came from.
I know that the aircraft was American registration.
How did you know the aircraft was American?
Because the N first on the registration.
The so-called N number marks an American plane. Swedish records show this Gulfstream G5, N379P, was there that night. Hammerberg says Sweden sent a diplomat to see them weeks later.
What did they tell him about how they were being treated?
That they had been treated brutally in general, had been beaten up several times, that they had been threatened. But probably the worst phase of torture came after that first visit.
And what was that?
Electricity.
But Alziri wasn't charged. After 2 years in jail, he was sent to his village in Egypt. The authorities are not allowing interviews.
A
Until he resigned last November, Michael Scheuer was a senior CIA official in the Counterterrorism Center. He created the CIA's Osama bin Laden unit and helped set up the rendition program during the Clinton administration.
They just didn't give us anywhere to take the people after we captured them.
So, the CIA started flying suspects to Egypt and Jordan. Scheuer says renditions were authorized by Clinton's National Security Council and officials in the Congress, and all understood what it meant to send suspects to those countries.
People get tortured.
Well, it can be rough. I have to assume that that's the case.
Doesn't that make the United States complicit in the torture?
You'll have to ask the lawyers.
I mean, it's a convenience, isn't it?
Yes, it's very convenient. It's finding someone else to do your dirty work.
The indispensable tool for that work is a small fleet of executive jets authorized to land at all U.S. military bases worldwide. Public record. That number belonged to this unmarked 737. We found the jet in Scotland, apparently refueling. The planes are based in North Carolina. They usually fly to Dulles Airport outside Washington before heading overseas. Major destinations read like a roadmap to the war on terror. 30 trips to Jordan, 19 to Afghanistan, 17 to Morocco, 16 to Iraq. One flight that took the 737 from Skopje, Macedonia to Baghdad, and finally, Kabul, Afghanistan. We found a man who says he was on that flight. Khalid Al-Masri was born in Kuwait, but now lives in Germany with his wife and four children. He became a German citizen 10 years ago. He told us he was on vacation in Macedonia last year, held him for 3 weeks, then took him to the Skopje airport, where he believes he was abducted by the CIA.
They took me to this room and they hit me all over and they slashed my clothes with sharp objects.
Al-Masri says he was injected with drugs and after his flight woke up in an American-run prison in Afghanistan.
He yelled at me and he said that you're in a country without laws and no one knows where you are. Do you know what that means? It was very clear to me that he meant I could stay in my cell for 20 years or be buried somewhere, and nobody knows what happened to you.
He says he told the Americans that he'd never been involved in militant Islam. He says he was beaten and kept in solitary confinement. Then, after his...
He told me that they had confused names and they had cleared it up, but I can't imagine that. You can clear up switching names in a few minutes.
He says he was flown out of Afghanistan and dumped on a road in Albania. When he finally made his way back home to Germany, he discovered his wife and kids were gone. They had moved in with her family in Lebanon. He called there to explain what happened.
You have a 7-year-old son. How did you explain this to him?
I said it was the Americans.
If you make a mistake, you make a mistake.
There was another destination that we noticed frequently in the plane's flight logs. It's Tashkent, the capital of Uzbekistan. It's a predominantly Muslim country with a reputation for torture. Craig Murray is the former British ambassador there. He told us that Uzbek citizens captured in Afghanistan were being flown back to Tashkent on the American plane.
Techniques of drowning and suffocation. Rape was used quite commonly, and also insertion of limbs in boiling liquid.
Boiling people?
Yeah, it's quite common.
Murray complained to his superiors that British intelligence was using information gleaned by torture. He was recalled by London 4 months ago and quit the Foreign Office.
Any reason to believe that the CIA knows that people are being tortured in these jails?
The CIA definitely reported to me that she'd met the CIA head of station, who told her that yes, this material probably was obtained under torture, but the CIA didn't see that as a problem.
President Bush, in a January interview with the New York Times, said this: torture is never acceptable. He added, nor do we hand over people to countries that do torture.
I'm not completely confident that any of the information received was exacted by torture. It's been very useful to the United States.
And if some of that useful information is gleaned by torture, that's okay?
It's okay with me.
Told now that there's no way that we're going to be told what it's going to cost until after you have begun military action.
It depends on the assumptions. It depends on how long the war lasts. It depends on whether weapons of mass destruction are used. We're dealing with a country that can really finance its own reconstruction in relatively soon.
The money's going to come from Iraqi oil revenue, as everyone has said. They think it's going to be something like $2 billion this year. They think it might be something like $15-$12 next year. They think it might be something like $18-$20 plus the next 19, the next year.
I will soon submit to Congress a request for $87 billion.
Why did the administration so dramatically underestimate the cost of this war?
We did not have perfect foresight into what we were going to find in Iraq.
What we have done is we have taken estimates looking at different variables and said, if this were the case on this variable and then on this variable, but there's so many variables that the numbers of possible point answers create a range that simply isn't useful.
Senator Frank Lautenberg is a former business tycoon himself, but he wanted to cut off Iraq reconstruction contracts for any company that has financial ties to the president, vice president, or any cabinet member. That would apply to a grand total of one company, Halliburton. It has a no-bid, open-ended contract to restore the Iraqi oil industry. Meanwhile, it's making severance payments to Vice President Dick Cheney, its former CEO. Cheney has said he's legally locked into accepting those payments. Lautenberg yesterday compared that arrangement with the one made by Treasury Secretary John Snow. When Snow moved from a CEO job to the cabinet, he took his severance pay in a lump sum and cut all financial ties. Senator Lautenberg.
That was the right thing to do when you're at the top of the executive branch with the direct ability to affect billions of dollars in contracts. And I urge my colleagues to attach some ethical guidelines to the Iraq Reconstruction Fund.
But Lautenberg's colleagues didn't jump at the chance. Alaska Republican Ted Stevens said the amendment had more than a whiff of politics.
If I had the power to do so, I'd close the room and turn on some fans. It's the most outrageous amendment I've heard in my time in the Senate in 35 years.
As part of this strategy, we are helping Iraqis to rebuild their economy after a long era of corruption and misrule. For three decades, Iraq's economy served the interests only of its dictator and his regime.
After some number crunching, Waxman and Dingell say that KBR was charging $1.62 a gallon and up. The spot price for Middle East gasoline was 71 cents.
That money goes to the government. The government, in turn, pays the workers a pittance and keeps the hard currency to prop up the dictator and his cronies.
Wall Street Journal reports Halliburton may have overcharged the government by a total of $100 million.
And when you make out that check, remember that there are two L's in Halliburton.
He built up a massive war machine while neglecting the basic needs of his own people.
They tell us that there's not enough money for our soldiers, our veterans, education, health care, jobs, or to clean up the environment. Instead of using that money for war, we should bring our troops home now.
Yet we will do what is necessary. We will spend what is necessary to achieve this essential victory in the war on terror. First war of the 21st century. First war of the 21st century. First war.
Mark Twain's definition of patriotism is patriotism is supporting your country all the time and your government when it deserves it.
Let's talk about the domestic surveillance issue. You heard Senator Kennedy there. So he wouldn't call it an impeachable offense, but certainly did question whether it might be an abuse of power. Are you confident that the administration has acted lawfully in this case?
I think we need to hold hearings on it, and we're going to. Both the Intelligence Committee, there'll be closed hearings, and then the Judiciary Committee will have open hearings. I think we need to look at this case and this issue. I am troubled by what the basis for the grounds that the administration says that they did these on, the legal basis, and I think we need to look at that far more broadly and understand it a great deal. I think this is something that bears looking into, and us to be able to establish a policy within constitutional frameworks of what a president can or cannot do.
You don't think the 9/11 resolution gave the president the authority for this program?
It didn't in my vote. I voted for that resolution. That was a week after 9/11. There was nothing you were going to do to stop us from going to war in Afghanistan, but there was no discussion and anything that I was around that gave the president a broad surveillance authority with that resolution.
Let's talk about Jack Abramoff for a minute. You received $42,000, I believe, from his clients, but have given it to charity. Why?
I do that regularly. If there is anybody that has given money, that there is any appearance of impropriety, I just give the money to a charity so as to remove that appearance of any impropriety involved in this case. And that's what I've done in this one, as I've done in past practices.
How well did you know Jack Abramoff, and did he ever ask you to take action on behalf of his clients?
He never asked me to take any action on behalf of any of his clients. I met him once over a breakfast or a lunch meeting, and that was the only personal contact that I had with him. Obviously, he was raising lots of money from Native American tribes and trying to move up fast and rapidly. I think he gave money to nearly 80 members in the United States Senate, so he was spreading it amongst Republicans and Democrats. And I'm hopeful that the trail was followed. And let's pursue this, and let's pursue it aggressively so that we can show the people a good, honest, clean government.
Preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, it requires, a wiretap requires a court order. Constitutional guarantees are in place when it comes to doing what is necessary to protect our homeland because we value the Constitution.
The information that we have received as a result of these programs has been very useful to the United States.
And if some of that useful information is gleaned by torture, that's
fully
okay.
Why members of
it's okay with me.
Expressing concerns about civil liberties. I know that. Do I have the legal authority to do this? And the answer is absolutely.
Or when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Now that the missions are coming to light, Scheuer says there is worry in the CIA that field agents will take the fall if any of the missions are later deemed illegal. CIA people feeling vulnerable to that?
Oh, I think from the first day we ever did it. There was a certain macabre humor that said sooner or later this sword of Damocles is going to fall, because if something goes wrong, the policymaker, the politicians, and the congressional committees aren't going to belly up to the bar and say, we authorize this.
In the case of the Egyptian cleric who disappeared in Italy, Italian prosecutors say there were two CIA teams, one that conducted surveillance of the target and another that executed the rendition. The cleric apparently ended up in Egypt. U.S. government sources say that Italian intelligence was told in advance of the operation, but the prosecutors in Milan still want to try the Americans for kidnapping. There's no indication that the U.S. intends to turn over its agents.
When the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
One of the scariest things to me about that war was the fact that it was not an easy war for people to take either side on. And the fact of the matter was that this country, as it does every time it comes down to war, completely loses its sense of humor. And when we do that, we become dangerously close to what we hate about our enemies. The terrorist is a person without humor at all. And we began to act like this. And neither side, knew exactly what they were talking about. I've reached the point where everything I watch on television, I think is a lie. I don't believe anything anymore. Because if I believe one side, then I start going, well, fuck, that's crazy. And then I leave the other side and go, well, they're crazier too. And then it doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't fucking matter. So at least maintain your humor. And we didn't. They actually came out with, this administration did it. They actually started to yell. That, you know, that those who were against the war, you know, once again it started, oh boy, you know, you might as well be for Saddam Hussein. Well, you know what? That's bullshit. And that kind of crap's got to stop. I didn't fucking spend my time living through the era of Vietnam to fucking come around to this fucking time and not having learned that the goddamn situation boils down to this. If you're against a war, it doesn't mean that you're for the other side. If people show up with signs that go, go Iraq, you fuckers, go, then you go, holy shit, and then you beat the fuck out of them. But our enemies is scary because they have no humor. None. They never had humor. These are people who wandered the desert and never ran into a knock-knock joke. Which is the price you pay for living in tents. But all I'm saying is one would think they would have had a flap-flap joke. It's been an absolute pleasure. I love you guys. Thank you.
This has been Mind Walk, an Upstart Radio production for nonprofit use.